Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
What I have here is a copy of Donald Trump's tax returns. We have his federal tax return for 1 year, for 2005. I believe this is the only set of the president's federal taxes that reporters have ever gotten a hold of. What we have are these two pages, front and back, from the same 1040 form that you might have filled out when you file your taxes.
Hello and welcome to Politics, the only podcast in the world dedicated to people with multiple penises. My name is Jeb Lund and I don't feel afflicted, I feel privileged. I am also a sometime political journalist for Rolling Stone and a bunch of other places. And joining me as always is Tim Batt.
That's right. I got three dicks, two thumbs, and one home here in New Zealand. It's great to be with you, Jeb.
So I wanted to start this out sort of loopily because I have basically just a really bad migraine. And so I'm on drugs for that. So I'm going to place myself in your care and thus place the audience in your care because I should not be, I really should not be entrusted with moving heavy machinery or concepts.
But you're off to such a good start with the poly appendage intro. I really enjoyed that. I'm keen to hear that kind of train take us through the political landscape and wherever it may lead. Happy to take the reins if you wish.
I did have one general thing that maybe you would like to speak to, and it requires no expertise, which is basically right the kind of frequency I'm vibrating at right now. But I was noticing that when we were watching, I think probably everybody who's interested in politics just watched Rachel Maddow reveal Trump's tax return from 2005, and it was two pages. And then as that right in that aftermath, other people sort of started tweeting about things, and I was looking at it and going, yeah, it's ancient. Where the hell is that from? And it was just a couple days before or something. But the rapidity with which we add more plot lines and then completely abandon them, I feel like I'm in the middle of what, like season like four or five of something made by Ryan Murphy.
Yeah, I know what you mean. There's a lot of throwing things to the wall and seeing what sticks, which I think is a combination of an intentional effort by the White House at the moment and an unintentional effort by the media just to kind of, you know, the kind of metaphysical equivalent of selling more papers. But we're here. And I'm glad that you and your multiple dicks are tingling and that's the vibe that you want to kick off on because I didn't see it. The way that I actually listened to Rachel Maddow's show a lot through the podcast. Uh-huh. And I just absorbed that. So you got the visuals as well, Jeb. You and your dicks got a special treat. I just got the audio bit of it. Can we just preface this by saying it wasn't a massive thing that she's just revealed. So I don't want to like tease people along, which I have to say, Maddow and her team did a little bit. They tweeted out that they had Trump's tax returns and they were teasing some stuff online that it was going to be a huge reveal. And the documents that they have are authentic, but it is a two-page summary called a 1040 form from over 10 years ago from Donald Trump and Melania's joint tax return. And it's real and it's true. And it told us that they paid $38 million on $150 million of income that year, which is about 25%, and that there was $103 million in business losses. But there was no kind of smoking gun or bombshell, and I did kind of get the sense that she was really trying to eke an entire show out of something that didn't warrant it. Did you get that feeling as well?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be one of those guys who's like, how dare you not have everything laid out for me? You know, when I get a scoop, totally. I want 100% of it at once. I mean, because I just know that that's not the way this works because I've seen my colleagues do that. As somebody reacting to the way it was sold in that really short span of time, like that we were going to have way more, I guess, comprehensive bombshell. I think people are right to be kind of peevish about it. But you know, much as I like might deplore other people kind of hectoring about this, like, yeah, okay, you know, it's sort of a letdown, but just wait for the next one to come. You know, we have, and these little things do kind of have to be pumped up because people do stop paying attention after a while. If somebody's kind of hitting a topic night after night after night, people start to tune out because they figure they can pick it up later. And sometimes, you know, these little kind of incremental developments don't wind up being paid attention to. And so people don't know that it's still evolving. So I can see kind of like the impulse on both sides, but.
Yeah. Yeah. And credit where it's due, it is quite a scope, like just for what it is more than the content of it, just conceptually the fact that they managed to get it. The way that it came to the Rachel Maddow show, by the way, for those who haven't kind of dug into this or seen it, there's an investigative journalist called David K. Johnston who said that it just landed in his mailbox. And he was pretty quick to point out as well that he's certainly not discounting the possibility that it came from Trump himself, which I could at this point totally buy that. With the heat that's coming on with the whole Russia storyline, people are starting to unravel more and more details about Michael Flynn, who has, in the last few days, in the last week, had to register retroactively as a foreign agent because of the amount of money that he was taking to act essentially as a lobbyist for the government of Turkey on the American government. Yeah, this is a pretty good distraction to get people talking about something, and it's something that's pretty easily diffused by Trump and the White House themselves because it looks like he paid the appropriate amount of tax. It's from a very far ago period, and there's kind of not a hell of a lot to it, even though it feels like we should all care about it.
Well, yeah, one of the things that everybody kind of says is like, well, here's a gotcha element of it. Is that Trump had to pay a sort of minimum exemption thing, and that I'm spacing on the exact term, but
yeah, it's like alternative minimum tax or something like that.
Yes, thank you. Alternative, yeah. I'm sitting here going like, I don't know what AMT is, and then I suddenly started wondering if maybe that was the brand of soccer ball I had when as a child. So
just, how are your painkillers treating you, listener? Yeah, how's it going? Great.
Look, you know, opiate addiction is a real thing, so please don't be like me. I'm not addicted. I can totally handle it. I've got it under control. I don't know why you're asking about this.
Jesus Christ. Right, James. Stay on the path, man.
Yeah, so in his tax plan, he wants to eliminate the AMT. And so the gotcha is that, like, oh, well, this is why he would want to eliminate it. This is totally in his self-interest. But, you know, duh, right? I mean, any conservative candidate is probably going to be somebody who is in danger of maybe paying a tax like this, and they would want to get rid of it. It's not a really sinister thing on Trump's behalf.
Oh, absolutely. And I don't even buy that it's down to the personal level, but it's about him lobbying on behalf of his donors, who are very rich people who get affected by that sort of thing. And just briefly, I'm probably going to fuck this up a little bit, but I'll get kind of the loose philosophy of it right, hopefully. The AMT is basically a minimum amount of tax that rich people have to pay. It sort of caps how many tax loopholes they're allowed to apply to their tax return for a year. So there's all these different deductions that you can take under the American system that the IRS have for different things. And the more kind of creative your finances are, which generally when you are like a multi-millionaire, you have lots of different sources of income, and they come from weird businesses and properties and things that have their own governing legislation with regard to tax. So you can take advantage of certain so-called loopholes or advantages. You kind of add them all up and you can get off paying a very low percentage of tax. Your what's called your effective rate. And so what this AMT thing is basically a part in the tax code in America that says you can only take this ceiling of tax advantages against your income. And this is the thing which, if it did not exist, apparently Trump would have paid like $5 million on the $150 million of income. But because it, and this is what he's, apparently at some point in the campaign, he said that he wanted to get rid of this AMT bit of the legislation. Because it exists, he paid $38 million rather than $5 million that year in 2005. But again, I can't get too bent out of shape about it, because it's just like, yeah, duh, this makes sense.
Yeah, and I mean, it's kind of like when the Romney returns came out and everyone went through it, and you're like, oh yeah, I mean, he's just your average rich hypocrite, and
yeah,
or you know, the kind of the common one that always gets brought up by Republican candidates is, you know, American corporations pay a 40% income tax. It's the highest in the world. And if you look at corporations like BP operating in America, or, you know, Exxon, they wind up paying nothing. I mean, just this
absolutely
tiny amount. And like, who actually, the people who do wind up paying the close to that 40% are usually more mom and pop level. But yeah, I mean, it was just, this is the same level of hypocritical cant. I'm fine. The only thing I thought was really interesting about that was that the Trump, you know, some Trump spokesman or whomever confirmed the numbers in that before Maddow went to air. So it was one of those like, okay, you know, we can't release our tax returns because we're being audited, but we can automatically confirm relevant round numbers the moment it becomes an issue and somebody else finds them. So, I
Which
mean, obviously
adds a little bit of fuel into this fire that Trump or one of his supporters is the one who provided the two-page summary for a tax return 12 years ago anyway. I'm going to get two tinfoil hat, but it's very possible.
That seems way too smart for them. I mean, because what it automatically does is it makes you wonder, well, how did he get to this small amount, or how did he wind up having to pay that AMT? What could he have gotten? You know, how much could he have deducted and from what? And how is he losing funds here and there, you know, and with what agencies or with what nationalities or companies or, you know, other partners, right? All the stuff that people want to hear about, they still want to hear about. And then they have this detail that automatically the administration responded hypocritically related to their previous statements on this during the campaign and after the election, that he can't release anything because he's under audit. I mean, that was always a BS explanation, but the minute somebody else got another document, they confirmed it and they broke that seal. You know, why would you open that inquiry?
They sort of did a similar thing. Was it the Times that obtained that kind of one-page summary from a few years ago as well? Details of which escape me at the moment. But they sort of tacitly confirmed that that was correct. But they came out ahead of this one and said that it was. So here for me is why this could actually be interesting. This is the interesting angle for me. The fact that it's out, and the fact that if you look at the PDF scan itself, it says client copy on it. So the fact that it's got that stamp on it means that this hasn't been leaked from someone in the IRS who has the document. This is someone on the other side of it. And hopefully, if they have this, they have some more details as well. So this was obtained from outside the IRS, and maybe they're sitting on more stuff that's going to come out in the following weeks.
Is that for sure? I'm not trying to impeach you. I don't know what client copy always or definitively means. Is that what you would?
Look, it's a little bit of an assumption, but my strong assumption is that the client copy stamp means that that is the return that gets sent back to the client as a finalization of the form when the tax return is sent into the IRS, and the internal copy that the IRS would retain for their records is put office use only or internal use or something similar on that one. And because Rachel Maddow, after taking off things like the social security number for Trump and Melania, after they redacted that, they did scan the whole form and it's got that client copy stamp on it. So that's kind of an interesting thing. If it was from the IRS's side of things, then I would actually think it would sort of be less interesting for me, because there's so many people who work in a tax administration who could kind of obtain that record and be a little bit cheeky, and especially if it's one from 2005, sneak it out somehow after they come across it. But the fact that it is on the sort of external side of the record keeping, that suggests that it's someone who maybe has access to more than just that 2005 1040 two-page summary.
I'm not trying to gainsay you. I was just trying to think of other reasons why that would be there. I mean, client copy could just be that the original was retained by his law firm or his accounting firm, and then this is the Xerox that they provided to the IRS, and that's why we got that. I don't know. Like, I really, that's why I'm kind of curious about like stamping protocol on these things. I've always, I've never been rich enough to need to like have anybody else file my taxes. So I don't know how you get those stamps on there.
Any taxation experts out there who specialize in stamping protocol, please tweet us at Tim_Bat or at Mabute.
Yeah.
On Twitter.
Mobute.
But let's, that's the phonetic, isn't it? I get confused because you have slightly different ones on Skype and Twitter and anywho's. To summarize, Rachel Maddow managed to get something that no one else has got, so congratulations to her. Congratulations to David K. Johnston, who somehow obtained these records. I don't think it's anything to get too excited about for right now, but it does open the window in terms of maybe there's more in this trail of breadcrumbs that will come down. Let's take a brief break, Jeb. And considering that you're on medications at the moment, why don't we dig into a little bit of that very exciting subject of healthcare?
Great. Yeah.
Just pretend to be excited, Jeb.
In 10 years, roughly 1 in 5 Americans, 52 million people, would be uninsured. Compare that to President Trump's campaign promise of insurance for everyone.
I am going to take care of everybody. I don't care if it costs me votes or not. Everybody's going to be taken care of much better than they're taken care of now.
Today, we pressed again.
Can you stand here today and say that the president will keep his promise of insurance for everybody?
I think the president's goal is to provide insurance, to make insurance available to everybody. Yes, that's what he intends to do.
Welcome back to Politics, a podcast about racists and the people who elect them. But we're not going to talk about that right now because Jeb and I are going to dig into the American Healthcare Act, or TrumpCare, as Trump himself is not calling it. Because despite the fact that that man would put his name on a dildo if he thought he could get 15% of sales on it, he is refusing to put his own name to this bill because he simply doesn't care about it. And the reason for that is it's complicated and no one gave him a heads up that healthcare could be complicated. Poor little dude. What's happened since last week is the CBO, which is the Congressional Budget Office, which is an independent but government agency that tries to make financial assessments of how legislation will play out in the future and what effect they'll have on the economy. They made an assessment, or what they call, they scored the new TrumpCare bill, and they've made a bunch of assessments and predictions. Not a lot of them are very good for America. They've said that 24 million Americans stand to lose their health insurance by 2026, with the first 14 million of those people losing it next year. They've also said that it would reduce the American deficit by $337 billion, which is good news, until you figure out that the way that that happens is by really fucking over poor people and by cutting into Medicaid, which is the system that helps very low-income people get access to healthcare in America, and something that Trump vowed on the campaign trail that he would not be cutting into or touching. And there are like some crazy examples that are coming out of the CBO scoring in terms of who's getting screwed and exactly how much by. One that I've sort of taken note of is if you get a 21-year-old single person earning $26,500, so someone who maybe forewent going to university, maybe they went to a technical college, something like that, they're just in a kind of regular, normal service industry job, 21 years old, under the ACA, under Obamacare, they would have paid about $1,700 in premiums on average. Under the Trump plan, it's $1,450, which is good. They actually save $250 a year, if I've done that quick arithmetic right. So that's all good. But if you've got a 64-year-old person who's earning that same amount, $26,500 a year, their premium is $14,600, which is 55% of their income. If they're 64, not earning a lot, $26,500, over half of their income is now going to go to healthcare. And this is a philosophical change that has happened in deciding who should pay for what in the American society. And we're seeing Paul Ryan's libertarian-loving, Atlas-shrugged, clutching arms produce real legislation now. Because this didn't come from Trump. This came from Paul Ryan. And what it's going to do is actually it's going to affect real human beings, poor, old, sick, vulnerable people. And It's a bit worrying. And I'm not even in America, Jeb. I'm here in New Zealand.
Yeah, I thought it was telling that one of the ways that Ryan bragged about it was saying, well, it's, you know, it cuts 300 and whatever, you know, billion from the deficit. It's an $823 billion tax cut. And it's going to, and like, those were the, in fact, I think he mentioned the tax cut first, and then he mentioned like actual healthcare performance second and completely forgettable, and then came back to, and it reduces the deficit by, and that's what this is all about. There's not really any point in pretending it's there for giving people actual healthcare. I mean, even its selling point is it gives everyone access to, which is great. I mean, like all of us technically have access to becoming, you know, NASA pilots. We could all actually go to the moon. We have access to that. What the probability of it that is very low, and like in many cases beyond you want it and are willing to work hard for it. But I mean, the really telling thing is when you point out those disparities in young and old, by making it really cheap for young people to get on it, what you're doing is you're getting a lot of people paying, you know, they're going to hop on and go, oh, okay, you know, well, I want to have insurance now, you know, because it's even less expensive for me. And and so they get on it and they're paying for it, and then they don't take anything out of it because they're young and they're healthy.
Yeah.
So they're really low cost. And what you're doing is you're taking all the old people who are the really expensive parts of healthcare, because they're the people who actually fucking use it.
Yeah. Like,
and you're kicking them off because you're making it so expensive. And then what you're doing is you're putting that, it automatically adding 30% to, their premiums if they want to get back on, because if they spend like 2 months off, right?
Yeah.
Then that kicks in and they've got to spend more. And so that acts as sort of a gatekeeper that keeps high cost clients from signing up for insurance. So an insurance company isn't going to pay out. And then what happens is they do like everybody who hasn't had insurance has done for a long time. They wait until they're almost dead and they go to the emergency room and then they get bankrupted. Yeah. And then they hope that they can stay alive until Medicare kicks in.
And just to speak to that 30% hike thing, I've got this theory, and I haven't heard anyone really talk about this, so I should probably leave it to the experts. But that 30% hike on people who get out of insurance or aren't already insured and they come into the system, that 30% hike is the equivalent of the individual mandate that they had on Obamacare. The way that it worked with Obamacare is the individual mandate was a fine that you had to pay to the government, so it was revenue that they were collecting. With this hike, it's not something that the government gets to collect. It's something that insurance companies get to charge their clients, the people that are being insured. So I don't, all these people are saying like that there are certain insurance companies and people in the insurance industry who think that Trump care actually isn't as bad as people are saying. I don't think it's because they think it will work. I think it's because they're seeing these short-term potential gains with this replacement of the individual mandate with their ability to charge even more to people. And they're going, oh, fuck it, probably won't work, but I'll bet we can make a lot of money next quarter for our shareholders. And I reckon that is acting as a massive carrot for spokespeople who are supporting this thing, which all the independent experts seem to be saying is not a good plan, economically speaking. It doesn't make sense from a coverage point of view. It doesn't make sense from a money point of view. Like, it is just legitimately bad policy. And again, call me conspiratorial if you want, but I kind of think that this replacement of the individual mandate with giving insurance companies an ability to charge their clients more is the only reason that they're on board.
Oh, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, this is not a healthcare bill. This is a tax cut bill that enormously benefits insurance companies because it mandates that, or it doesn't mandate, but it encourages young, inexpensive clients to sign up for insurance, and then has a nice gateway on it that not only kicks old, expensive people off and then prevents them from coming back on, but then, you know, all the actual human suffering that occurs from this via that old system of just wait until you're about to die and go to the emergency room, that winds up being the bill for that is foot by the average taxpayer, the person who, you know, it doesn't make enough money to have a firm figure out how to make you only pay the AMT, right? You know,
exactly.
I can't really evade our taxes very well, so you and I wind up footing the bill for people who wind up, you know, dying, spending $130,000 at the emergency room dying.
I think you've hit on perfectly the kind of difference between the Democrats and the Republicans here. And this is really a Paul Ryan thing, because people can kind of forget this every now and then, but Paul Ryan was, and still is, I think, way out on the right, economically speaking. And this is like a philosophical difference in, number one, what healthcare legislation should be. Obama and the Democrats under his White House always looked at this in terms of services delivered to people. It's always going to be expensive. It's always going to be messy because of the complicated system that America has in the intersection of public services and private health insurers and that sort of thing. But to try and make some gains into making the system better in terms of health outcomes for the citizenry. Whereas the Republicans, they just look at the numbers. It's everything is just about the dollar amount. It's just about the monetary value and trying to get tax cuts and look, everyone, we're reducing government. And just completely blinded to the fact that there are real world consequences to this stuff. And what we're talking about is sick people. And it just seems to like not enter into the conversation nearly as much as it needs to when you hear people from the GOP talking about this.
Well, I mean, that's such an animating part of their philosophy anyway, though, the pathology of poverty. If you can't afford health insurance, it must be because you did something morally suspect, or you possess an inherent lack of industry and ambition. It's on you. And that's great, because that exculpates any number of indignities you visit on other people, because you can always say that, like, they would have had a soft cushion from what you just did if they hadn't made the wrong decisions. So, I mean, I kind of admire the symmetry of this bill. I mean, it really rat fucks millions of people and then just, passes the savings on to a bunch of, just fucking ghoulish private entities. Because, I mean, so like people in New Zealand aren't going to understand this, but prior to Obamacare, you didn't have insurance in America. You paid thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars for it per year, but you didn't have insurance because your private healthcare, your private insurer could just practice something called rescission, where it said that, according to this, they were going to rescind the contract because you had failed to uphold some obscure protocol or clause in it. And then they could cap your payouts over your lifetime. So you're paying $10,000 a year in insurance, but you only get $1 million in care. So if you get
I didn't know that. That's crazy. So you pay over your lifetime, not even annually, but like they could do that for an individual across their lifetime.
Yes. So like your kid gets, thanks to some anti-vaxxer, who's been reading John Birch Society information, your kid gets measles, you have a really shitty insurance plan that you pay thousands into, so you can get a really low deductible, but it caps a whole bunch of services. So your kid gets a lifetime only like $500,000 or $1 million or something. And because he gets such a bad fever and he's there for like 2 weeks and they have to do they have to trepan him or something, right? You blow through that money. Well, that's it. That's his care. He's done.
Man. I didn't realize that.
So the system was already unspeakably evil. And then we forced them to stop. We said, all right, no more denial of care for these, these caps, no more denial of care for pre-existing conditions. Insurance will actually be a contract, right? A contract that one party cannot unilaterally rescind the moment it no longer profits them.
And you're not allowed to charge people more money just because they are female in gender.
Yeah, so we finally fixed all that, and then now it's sort of like a gear mechanism when you create an entitlement, the whole of social expectations kind of ratchet into place and they can't roll back, and the only thing you can do is kind of take what is there now, what is sort of peeking out of the machine, that sort of and just dissolve it or compromise it, so the mechanism doesn't work correctly. So you make abortion a right, and then you water down and strangle the ability for people to provide abortions, or you go ahead and we can't go back to not having Obamacare. So they just really fucked it, just a really masterful way of taking the way it works and going, how could we immiserate the most people possible? And I'm sorry, I really shouldn't be laughing at this, but at some point, you just sort of look on to like the monolithic capacity to do harm to the most poor people possible. Yeah. And, just sort of starts to take on this almost slapstick size to it. I mean, it is so big and it is so unrelenting that, like, in any other kind of medium other than politics, we would feel this was farce.
This leads me to a question. Are they going to get away with it? Is this thing going to pass? The Republicans who are, like, hiding away from these town halls and stuff, are they going to be able to vote for this, especially considering that the midterm elections are next year? What's your sense?
Well, okay, so the thing, like, when they came out and they were like, look, this is a much better bill because it's smaller than the other bill. Did you see that?
Yeah, God, when Spicer came out with the printouts of both the ACA and the proposed Trump care bill. Fucking hell, man. That did my head in. God damn it. I was like, this is really dumb. This is a really fucking dumb thing.
Yes.
And anyone who's jazzed about this, I'm sorry, but you're dumb. This is so smoke and mirrors in such a basic elementary school show and tell kind of way that it is like hilarious and absurd that this is the spokesperson for the White House doing this shit. I know there's a lot of examples of that at the moment, but they literally did a visual one and it was just, I mean, SNL, I don't even know how you improve upon that because it was just such a perfect comedic moment. And he was kind of like aghast and running out of vocab himself anyway, like tying himself in knots. He's just like, look at them. This pile of paper's way bigger than the other one. That means it's worse. It's like, what the fuck are you talking about, dude? No, not how laws work.
Well, no, like, so the image that popped into my mind is like almost like a guy was just sort of a tragically underendowed guy trying to explain to you why that's good. He's like, no, it's golf rules. It's actually better if it's smaller.
Like, a lot of dick jokes from Jeep today. I like it.
But so like the other reason why, and probably people listening know this, but like the other reason why that was fucking funny and just absurd is, you know, the Obamacare was a final bill after you amend the shit out of it. And like everybody kind of hops on with their pet thing and like, hey, you know, we've got a piece of legislation here. It might move. How can we fuck that up? So like nobody's fucked up the Republican bill yet. And by the time they're done, you know, I can see it moving quite a bit because Breitbart went balls to the wall along with like Instapundit and a couple other super right wing kind of idiot factories with, you know, the audio of Paul Ryan back in after like the Trump sex tape thing broke, the groping tape thing broke. He said on a phone call with like a bunch of representatives, I'm not going to stick up for him. You have your own problems in your own districts. If you feel like you don't, if it's best for you not to defend Donald Trump, go right ahead. So Breitbart and all those other outlets just started like going balls to the wall with that, oh, Ryan betrayed Trump. He said, I will never defend him. We're like, you know, this is October. This is old news. But one of the quotes, and maybe it was a different article, was like something like, Trump is the world's greatest negotiator. He's very disappointed with what's going on Capitol Hill. And so they seem to be signaling that they're willing to sell out a whole bunch of Republican principles to get this thing moving forward and placate the base. This bill is probably dead on arrival anyway. There's already four Republicans who are going to vote against it in the Senate. So they can really, you know, fuck it up and make it more palatable. It kind of remains to be seen who's going to prevail, if it's going to be Ryan or Trump. Because, you know, the one kind of obverse of that is like, if they just pass this Ryan bill, Trump's just going to sign it.
Of course, you know? He will. But Trump, he wants this. He wants success for this bill as well. He wants it to pass, not for any ideological reason or any policy reason, but so that he has something he can bring to the people as a trophy and say, I did this thing.
Yeah.
Like, he wants a win, because that's the only thing that he ever wants, is just something that he can spin into being a victory. And an easy win for him would be getting, after the GOP has been yelling about repeal and replace for this many years, to actually be able to replace the ACA with a new piece of legislation. He can absolutely claim that as a scalp, and that's what he's got his eyes on. I don't think he would ever give a shit of the contents of the bill whatsoever. It's not part of his makeup. Those aren't things he cares about. But it is scary, because that then allows people like Paul Ryan to be crafting all of this legislation. I mean, we're like, what, a month in? A few days shy of 2 months in now of this administration.
We're like 53? 53
days. Sounds about right. The two pieces of legislation they've tried to get passed are the Muslim ban, which died on its ass the first time, and we're only just kind of getting the second version of now, which they attempted to make bulletproof against challenge, but it's still being challenged in courts as it's being...
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Attempted to be brought in. And this... in the American Healthcare Act. So he is looking for a win because as time goes on, new administrations generally have a lot of popularity and energy to them, so they're able to get legislation passed more quickly. If he can't get this healthcare bill voted on and turned into legislation, then... I mean, they can kiss healthcare goodbye. They're not going to be able to attempt it again like they were with the Muslim ban or anything else. It's too complex. He will have expended, the GOP will have expended all of the energy and capital trying to get the first one passed. So if they can't get this one passed, that's dead. So we get to keep the ACA, which is kind of good. But it, I think it just takes the wind out of the sails of them kind of being able to do anything except maybe build some version of the wall, which won't be what they promised it would be because that's too expensive. But I think that's the only thing that he can fall back on now as a campaign promise that he can try and enact.
Yeah, I don't, I mean, no, you're right. Like the, both the EO and this, those are, and the wall are like the, his three core campaign things beyond like
and
greatness
lock her up.
And China and yeah, locking her up. But like, he can't do any of that. So you might see a lot of like flurries of activity in the executive branch. I mean, there, so the alternative that was, not the alternative, but the one of the things that was floated last week was the Reorganization of the Executive Branch Act or whatever it was. Did you see this?
Fuck, no, I missed that entirely.
I don't have it. I'm on a completely different computer. Why didn't I plan ahead? Yeah, just basically like if we feel like these departments have overlapping functions, we'll just merge them. And if we don't really feel like this department should be doing this or this program is appropriate, we'll just cut it. And so they're this was floated just a couple days ago, and I don't remember what happened to it because it kind of it just got lost in all the tax stuff.
Yeah, right.
But the or maybe it was just today. I mean, that's again like this time dilation thing. I can't tell you if that happened this morning.
Yeah.
But the idea that Bannon's aspiration to deconstruct the apparatus of the state, right? This is just a really easy way to do it. And you can say like, hey, we got rid of the Department of blank, you know, all this shit that was on like Rick Perry's kill list. We got rid of this, we got rid of that program. And it doesn't require, I mean, it would require the majority in Congress to sign off on it. And since so many of those guys have campaigned on streamlining government, that would be pretty easy to do, but it makes it look like you accomplished a lot, even if you wind up with the same number of people employed. And, it would appeal to their sense of slovenliness of just sort of like mash these things together and then let them fuck up and not do anything correctly. Because
yeah,
governing
it sounds
badly
like
is just, yeah.
Based on what you're saying, like it's kind of the best case scenario is that it's just a bit of glamour legislation that they put on the books and it doesn't actually achieve anything, but it looks like it's reforming government and trimming the fat. But at worst, it actually does what they intend it to do, which is cut potentially entire agencies out and or at the very least probably defund them because that's what the Republicans want to do. And I mean there's no point in being wholesale either way. Like, let's be adults about it. There are probably big sections of the government that need to be looked at and reshaped, and we know that within any large organization there's huge amounts of waste, and with the government it's not under the same kind of microscope or heat to find those inefficiencies as in the private sector. So like, I'm not saying that anyone who wants to make government more effective is, you know, some brutal hard right winger, but generally speaking, the way that the GOP talk about it and try to introduce bills to do that sort of thing is like, hey, you know what we don't need? The EPA in total. Let's get rid of it. It's like, no, hold on. I actually think you'll find if you ask most people on the planet, they think you probably need a stronger agency that is acting in the interest of the environment, because you guys seem to ignore that quite a lot. So it's like, conceptually, I don't disagree with this kind of mood of making government more efficient. Who could? That's a good thing. But the way that it's enacted when the Republicans talk about this stuff often comes out in very ideological ways, which is seeing things like Planned Parenthood's funding getting slashed, even though economically it's a terrible thing to do, for a lot of reasons that we can kind of get into, or you can just read Freakonomics and figure it out. But it's kind of like this deceptive wrapper that they put on when they want to cut something on ideological grounds. They'll say that it's trimming government fat, and it's real dishonest, and it's quite freaky. And that's why you got to kind of pay attention to what the fuck they're up to. Like, I didn't even hear about, was that going to be a proposed bill, Jeb, or was that like an executive order, this kind of trimming the fat, combining agencies thing?
Well, if you're removing secretaries, then that has to, that would have to have consent of Congress, because they're mandated. Right. Unless I'm much mistaken, and trust me, I could be. We're going to look this up in the break, and then if not, it's getting cut. But
a fun thing for us all to go and Google now while we take 5 minutes. Did you want to say something, Jeff?
I was just going to say that trimming the fat thing, right? This is something I witnessed in Florida. This is something that's happened on the national level. I had a friend who used to work at the EPA, and we were talking about this and this sort of phenomenon. He says, dude, this is the entire history of the EPA under conservative governments. What you do is you try to defund it as much as you can. You appoint people who are politically empathetic or sympathetic to you, who then don't use the actual power of the agency at full strength, and then slow walk everything else. So when the EPA has to go ahead and approve some sort of use of federal land, that you make the study take as long as possible. So even the parts of the government that still function, because you can't eliminate those functions because they're baked into, you know, the creation of the agency, you make so inefficient and intolerable that you erode people's sympathy for it, so they don't mind when you cut it some more. And it doesn't matter if it still exists, because it works best for you if this agency becomes obnoxious and obstructs proper governance, because you are constantly depreciating its, you know, the public opinion and sympathy for the agency. And then you constantly kind of feed that disaffected public these images of all the really great things that could make a lot of money if we just got this agency out of the way, because look, it's this red tape holding it up. Well, the red tape isn't holding it up. It's the fact that you don't have, you know, you're misusing it on purpose. You're misusing it and you're underfunding it.
Especially the EPA in 2017 is a pretty good example as well, because Scott Pruitt, who's the head of it, is a dude who has kind of spent his entire life trying to get the thing completely dismantled, and he is in charge of it now.
Well, he was suing it like a half a dozen times or something like that, so technically he's being sued by himself now.
So that's just it's an absolute naked manifestation of the thing that you're talking about. Put a guy in charge of it who has spent his life fighting against it. If he's not going to shut the entire thing down, he's going to do enough damage so that it has a fatal wound to it. It's a bit sad when you consider that like climate change is a real thing that will probably kill us within a few generations as well. But this isn't some small thing. This is potentially the most important thing that any of us should be thinking about, but we're not.
Just the other thing I wanted to say, sticking up for government employees, because I'm very fond of many of them, and I watch them have to do their jobs with, like, you know, where people who work for a city or state government, and they actually have to plan something that involves colors, and they're given monitors that don't actually show more than like 4, and the tint control is broken, so they've got to somehow design something for the public via, you know, equipment that they literally makes it impossible for them to see what they're designing. I just want to say, like, all that waste baked in, I mean, we've been, you know, the U.S. government has been quote unquote trimming the fat now for over a generation. I mean, they've been doing it my entire, you know, for the entirety of my long-term memory, there have been Republicans trying to decrease the funding and eliminate these departments. And at the same time, when you do say like, well, you know, there's a lot of inefficiency in there, I would argue that there really can't be much anymore for a lot of them. a part of, like, outside of Department of Defense and other things that are super sexy. And that, you know, if there are inefficiencies, I wouldn't be surprised to see, like, if most of them are baked in by the democratic process. Like, you know, take the F-35, which is made in a couple dozen different states and costs like $1 billion and doesn't fucking work. But yeah, that's because somebody said we have to build this, and now we're going to build it in as many places as possible with as many benefits to as many different federal districts as possible. And I don't know. I mean, just,
yeah, that's
I like government. I want to hug it.
Yeah, that's a pretty good example. And I mean, it's like, how efficient do you want your government to be? There's almost like this image in my head that we should be creating an office where people can work a realistic 40-hour week and be able to take time off if someone in their family passes away or they have a baby or they're very, very ill. So it's kind of like, if you have this incredible machine that is operating uber efficiently, the kind of flip side of that is it's generally a very cold organization that does not allow people to be human and have lives. So there is kind of like a counter to one man's government waste is another person's halfway decent employer as well.
Yeah.
The F-35 thing, yeah, that's an interesting one. But we'll get onto that in another episode.
Or we're like, hold on, one other one. Like the
next flight... Week. I love talking about the really... F-35 though. It's an interesting program.
Okay, I'll stop.
We'll be back in just a moment to maybe discuss the intelligence community at large, but more specifically this Trump claim that Obama wiretapped him. Because it's fun to talk about stuff that's not real sometimes.
So, Congressman Kingston, let's talk about Michael Flynn. He was fired for lying to the vice president about his connection with the Russian ambassador. And now we have learned that he was working as a foreign agent for Turkey, paid more than $500,000 while he was working for the Trump campaign. And he just filed paperwork to make that official 2 days ago. It seems like that would have been important information for the American people to know, don't you think?
So welcome back to Politics. And I don't want to get really back on another topic for too long here, but about the Ryan Murphy TV series thing that government is turning into, all I want like a really good murder and cover up and somebody to like come out in a really, really shocking way. And then also clowns and ghosts and children singing.
Dude, I think you might get it with this administration. This seems like, of any U.S. president in history, this is the one to deliver you those things. It's all things to all people, as long as all people are big fans of drama and thrillers and political intrigue and the Russians being involved and the Chinese holding all the debt, the personal debt of the person in charge of the White House. You couldn't write this shit.
Yeah, I just feel like, you know, if you replace the White House staff with the writer's room from Nip Tuck, I don't think anything would be different.
No. This is, I mean, it feel, because at the moment it feels like we are in the kind of introducing stages. We're getting to know who the characters are. They've had to kill off a couple of people already who didn't test well. Steve Bannon is kind of the supervillain who they're like cultivating at the moment in the writer's room, where we have a few details on him. We know a bit about him and there's like, you know, a little bit that you can dig into with his character, but you feel like they're hiding him away a little bit too much at the moment and that it's got to signal him coming back in a really huge way soon. Maybe when they get Trump out of the way and it's Pence's White House, which now that I've struck upon that actually, because I saw that coming up a little bit today, and I've got a funny feeling maybe there was a WikiLeaks tweet that set this off, but I did see some people talking about unnamed intelligence community officials discussing the possibility that they would overthrow Trump with Pence in the next month and that no one was sure if Pence was even in on it. In terms of like a, what would it be, like a thermometer or, oh, okay, like the doomsday clock, Jeb. You know, that how many seconds, minutes or hours we're supposed to be away from nuclear holocaust and wiping ourselves out as a species. Where do you think we are on like a Pence clock, which is actually pretty apocalyptic as a thought process as well?
Pretty low. I mean, so that was supposedly, it was WikiLeaks, wasn't it, unearthing some like internal Clinton thing and how they wanted, or, it, man, like, just sort as of Trump flew by has, today.
As Trump has taught us, sources are not important, Jeb. Just make your point and make it as simply as possible.
No, I don't think we're anywhere close to a Pence o'clock, because anything, any mechanism that is going to get Trump out is probably going to implicate Pence at this point. I mean, unless you suddenly got the entire Republican Party in Congress, like the entire Republican caucus growing a spine and saying, we're going to get Donald Trump out for the emoluments clause. And I don't know why they would set the precedent of having the Congress care about, a Republican president's ethics. They would have to go that route, because the only other way I would give getting him out would be all the supposed Russia ties. And I think at this point, Pence would be implicated in knowing about it. You couldn't be on the campaign that long without having some idea that, you know, these people don't have like great OPSEC, right? Like Trump isn't creating a Chinese wall between, you know, like Manafort and all those other guys, and Flynn and Kislyak and like, you know, all these oligarchs. And then over here is Mike Pence. And there's no way he's keeping track of this shit. He's not telling Mike Pence, right?
But it's all about which parts of it have been publicly disclosed and which connections. The only bit that it seems like Mike Pence could be got on at the moment is there seems to be some people connecting the dots about the timeline with which Sally Yates, the then acting attorney general, came to the White House and said, hey, you know how your boy Michael Flynn said that he wasn't communicating with the Russian ambassador about Russian sanctions? He's lying to you guys. And she only went to the White House because Mike Pence was going on all the Sunday shows saying, I've talked to Mike Flynn. Mike Flynn has assured me personally that that is not the case. And Sally Yates went, we've been listening to the dude's phone calls because we tap all the foreign ambassadors, and your boy's lying to you, or you are knowingly lying to everyone. And then the next thing that happened is Sally Yates got fired, and then they sat on that information for, it's something like 13 days before they came out and had to take action against Flynn. So that, whilst I think it's very possible that Trump could be taken down over this Russia stuff, who knows where that's going to go. Even in the short term, this could get really big. Maybe it won't. They have maybe kept Flynn enough away from it that he could become the president. He is going to know some things, and he's going to have some exposure to this, but I think maybe they can limit his exposure, at least in the public eye, for enough for him to become president if there is some sort of constitutional crisis. That's my read at the moment.
I question how much you would want to preserve Pence there if you were Trump's people, right? So how are, because they are the ones who would want to insulate him from things, because you know, they don't want certain things to get out, and they want to like make sure that it's only blamed on like a limited number of people. They want to insulate Trump first and insulate Pence second, right? But if they're losing Trump, so much so that Pence is going to be installed in his stead, right? And Trump is going to be driven out, but he's going to be impeached and convicted by Congress or something, or he's going to resign and Pence is going to take charge. He's going to go and find a bunch of Paul Ryan clones. Like, he's not going to keep Steve Bannon around. So if anything, it would just be tempting to go ahead and implicate him, like, or just not keep that, not preserve him from that, because then, you know, the Republicans get President Paul Ryan. But at that point, I mean, it's going to be so compromised because they'd gone along with and prevented, you know, Ryan hasn't leaned on committee chairpersons in the House to say, start investigating Donald Trump. And every single day that he drags his feet means that he is basically neutered if he ever does become president from the speakership. So, you know, I can't, like, if you're, the Trump people strike me as the sort of people who would burn down the house as they were leaving it.
Just out of curiosity, I've Googled the present line of presidential succession, and this is how it would carve up. Trump goes, we get Pence, then it's Paul Ryan, then Orrin Hatch, then Rex Tillerson, then Steve Mnuchin, and then James Mattis, and then Jeff Sessions after that. That's
every
a freaky
one of them
list
a philosopher
of white
king.
Yeah, right? What a terrifying list of names. It's like a BuzzFeed, who would you most want to have for the apocalypse?
Every time I see Tillerson, man, I just expect... Did you see the South Park episode after that Roger Goodell thing over the domestic battery in the NFL when it was just a Roger Goodell bot and it kept saying the same things over and over?
No, sir, did not see that.
I just keep expecting him to do that, and he's going to come into a press conference, and he's not going to move his mouth, but you're going to hear this grainy, tinny sound of Roger Goodell going, "We're working hard to get it right. We are going to work hard, and we are going to get it right."
The State Department at the moment has turned into a really fascinating and I think largely underreported phenomenon that's happening in the Trump administration as well, because they cut the funding to it, I believe, by 30%. And I'm not sure that anyone has heard a second syllable out of Rex Tillerson in total on the public record at this point. They've resisted to the max doing any kind of press conferences whatsoever. And, oh, goodness, what's her name? Veteran reporter at NBC.
Julia Ioffe? Oh, no. Oh, Andrea Kramer. Andrea Mitchell.
Yeah, you got it. Andrea Mitchell has now taken to turning up to these like handshake press conferences where people are allowed to take photos of Rex Tillerson shaking hands with someone, and has just attempted to single-handedly turn it into a press conference by asking him questions about how he feels with the funding cuts, and he doesn't even acknowledge that she's in the room, and then the press handlers very politely, because they have to acknowledge the fact that Andrea Mitchell is quite a respected veteran of the industry, and just kind of shush her and move her along and get her out of the room and tell her that there won't be any questions today, as if she's some drug-addled grandma who thinks that her fridge is talking to her. Which actually, I've almost described Kellyanne Conway accidentally now, based on her comments in the last week. But it's hopefully there's going to be slightly more transparency going forward. They did talk about doing some more press conferences from the State Department involving Rex Tillerson. Maybe they're training him at the moment. The dude doesn't have any political background whatsoever. He has spent his entire adult life at Exxon. So maybe they are, like, as quickly as possible, giving him media training and figuring out how to minimize the damage he could do in a press conference. I don't know.
Well, they're just adding tape loops to him. I mean, that motherfucker looks like... You ever see those old, like, pendulum clocks that were shaped like cats, where, you know, they'd have the tail would wag back and forth, and the eyes would look left and right? And, like, he's like that... like combined with a Teddy Ruxpin. He's just this fat idiot who can't, I mean, he just smiles and he looks left and right and left and right. And then he, like, if he does talk, what comes out is just fucking stupid. I mean, like, this
I think he's nervous. They're just Look, adding, I don't want to call the guy an out and out idiot, because he's like, you know, to be the CEO of the largest, I think by market cap, if not right now, at some point, the largest business in the world, is no mean feat. And I actually just recently, God, I was reading it for such a long time, but I read Hidden Empire, which is that Steve Cole book about like the modern history of ExxonMobil. And I think from memory, the dude is a doctor of chemical engineering or something. And the managerial skills that you'd have and kind of, you know, you've got to have a little bit of a brain on you to be managing ExxonMobil. But I haven't had any evidence of that in his current role.
I feel like these guys are just living proof of the, you know, the maxim that I think not enough people realize is pretty much true. And that, you know, I think it's insecurity and imposter syndrome on a lot of people's parts, but like, this shit ain't that hard, right? Like, there are a lot of people that you meet who have very, very vaunted positions in this world. And honestly, this shit ain't that hard. Like, Ben Carson is the perfect example. I mean, he's like this stud neurosurgeon. The man's a fucking idiot.
Yeah, that's like, true. You know, you got me there.
He's a perfect like confirmation that surgeons are basically mechanics. They have to memorize a lot more stuff and you pay them a lot more. But like, there's not a lot of thinking going on after they kind of get the moves down. Well, some of them. I mean, like, obviously, they're very, very smart people who do everything. But like, you can meet a meathead surgeon. It's not hard.
Like, yeah, that's fair.
This like clatch of meatheads in charge of everything. I mean, all these people who've just failed upward because society hasn't had the courage to just step in and go, just hold on a fucking minute. Look, not you.
I just briefly, because I teased it earlier, there's a radio term for you. the allegation that Trump tweeted out 6 or so days ago that Obama had wiretapped him. This is an interesting little smokescreen that he seems to have thrown up, that no one is coming to his aid to defend. Like, literally no one, not even Trump himself, has tried to present evidence to support the claim. But, like, no one even seems to be entertaining the idea that it could possibly be real. If it is, it's just, I will say this, there's been kind of a whole news cycle or three about this thing already, and the common wisdom at the moment is that there was a particular Breitbart article that was written, which was based off of like a single right-wing talk radio rant that got published, and 36 hours later, Trump was tweeting about these wiretaps. So it seems like he read this article, got the bones of it, added the wiretap bit because that wasn't in the original article, and then just went ham on Twitter about it. Which, if we just take a breath to analyze that for a second, that's what the US president's doing, reading a Breitbart article and then adding his own spin on it and then just tweeting about it, especially when it's an allegation that the former president has wiretapped him at his home. Christ. But anyway, if we were to take him at his word, if he was wiretapped in Trump Tower, as he claims that he was, the first important thing to note is that the president doesn't order those. That's not a function of the executive. That's not something that they can order up. That's something that the CIA, the NSA, or the FBI would be able to order. And the only way that they can do that and listen in and surveil an American citizen is by going to the FISA court, which is the Foreign Intelligence Service Court. And whenever you hear people talk about FISA warrants, that's what they're talking about. It's this 11-judge court. They're all appointed by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, and they make the determination on whether these intelligence agencies are allowed to surveil American citizens, because that's quite a big deal. And there's quite a high legal threshold
I will
that
note
you have to meet.
That they have to judge underground. It's in the law. They have to do all their judging underground. They're not allowed to see daylight when they're judging.
Are you serious?
No, not at all. Keep going.
God damn it, Jeb.
I picture
how
like
cool would that be, though?
The FISA court, like you have to go in an elevator and it takes you 36 stories below the ground and you go into an actual star chamber. Like there's the big rose, like compass rose star and like red marble on the ceiling and then recessed lights
and
are throwing shadows everywhere.
The warrants aren't legally binding unless the order is signed inside of the pentagram that's got the candles at each point and the tip of the star has to be pointing south at all times.
That's right. Call on Goddess Hecate and the four winds.
Now, for reference as well, the FISA court like isn't exactly, they don't have a lot of pushback when it comes to these requests. They received something in the order of 10,000 between 2010 and 2015, and they rejected one outright and one partially of that. But part of the reason for that can be explained away by saying that these intelligence agencies realize that it's such a high legal threshold that has to be met when you take stuff to the FISA court that they are only taking cases that are ready with a lot of backing to be able to meet the probable cause point that they have to reach to get these warrants. So, I mean, I'm entertaining a real flight of fancy here, but the thing is that if Trump was right, this is such a stupid thing that he said. This is such a stupid trap that he sent for himself. He's either lying to everyone, which is infinitely more likely, but if he's right, first of all, he's got to be technically incorrect because it's not something Obama would order. It's something one of the security agencies would. And if that's true, it means that they have made a determination that he is such a great risk to national security, or there is so much suspicious evidence to suggest that claim, that they were able to go to an 11-panel court of judges and obtain legal permission to surveil him underground under the watchful eye of a goat skull while numerous candles burn in a pentagram. But like, there's no good outcome for it. He's either lying or essentially working with another government against America's interests. You get to pick one of those.
Lying, stupid, or that, right? Yeah. So he sees something, he sees a bright shiny object. So the provenance is even deeper than that. It's like from the only source was somebody that Louise Mensch, another massive idiot, an ex English MP, Tory MP, who now like writes about England for The Guardian, but doesn't live there. She lives in like upstate New York or something. So like, good on you there.
But, hey, man, I can't talk.
But yeah, like, so she reported it on Heat Street, which just sounds like, you know, like, you know, politics buzz.
Yeah.
DC zone. Heat Street. Like, I feel like there should be breakdancing and like some white kid beatboxing on Heat Street. But so they reported that, and then that's what Mark Levin called back to on his like Louise Mensch's reporting that Mark Levin was dipping back to, because this is like months old, on his radio show that then Breitbart wrote up, and then that was actually put in the presidential briefing. So it was given to Trump, and it may have been given to Trump precisely because it would be something like he would go, ooh, you know, about, I don't know, like.
Apparently they let junior aides compile those things, and like if you really want to, pretty much anyone in the inner circle can just throw an article in. It cracks me up the way that he's being served up his information at the moment, to think that there's people probably my age just like, oh yeah, this looks good, a stack of half a dozen Breitbart articles and some Glenn Beck claims from 6 years ago. We'll put that in front of the president.
Fuck, man. Like, I don't know if you saw the ProPublica piece, but they were doing profiles of the non-political appointees that the Trump administration has appointed to a lot of federal departments that don't have to be confirmed by Congress. And there was one guy who invented like this combination bow and arrow and tent pole thing. And believes that Muslims, yeah, no, it's like, you know, I can't believe they invented it. It's like, it's like
that specifically is an interesting Venn diagram to be in the center of. The Bushmen who would like, while they're assembling their tent, to be able to take down wildlife as well at a moment's notice.
It does like six different things. And actually, I mean, so this actually does kind of seem ingenious if you are a weird outdoors person. I could see buying it. But he also believes that like Muslims need to be exterminated and there's no negotiating with them or something like that.
Oh, of course.
Not the word exterminated, but close enough that you kind of get what they mean. So he's in there. Mm. There's some kid who just graduated high school and his only qualification was he was an intern at some ultra right dildo delegates firm or something like that. So he's in the Department of Energy or wherever the fuck he is. I mean, but this kid, I mean, he looks like he's drowning in his suit. And if you played rock and roll at him too loud, he would start pissing himself. And this guy's in charge of only probably like the welfare of thousands and thousands, if not millions of people in some oblique, but I'm sure we're going to find out eventually devastating way.
Yeah.
It's
an exciting world we live in though, isn't it?
It's like the Chinese curse that you live in interesting times.
Yeah. We're giving that a go for a while, Jeb, because we got bored of staid stability and centrism and normalcy and protecting people's rights. So let's try putting a 21-year-old in charge of the energy department, and let's try making the leader of the free world's chief kind of information officer just a racist who used to run a right-wing news outlet, which has only come to prominence by kind of banking on people's worst fears in the aftermath of a financial crisis. Let's do all these things and more, because we can.
Yeah, no, and somebody pointed out today, and I wish I remembered who, because it was such an apt description, Bannon looks like, I mean, I don't know why I don't know why I'm reducing it to looks again, I guess because of just the sheer impotence, like in the face of everything they're actually doing. So I'm just like, yeah, well, he looks stupid.
but that, like, being said, make your insult.
He looks like he looks like what you imagine every customer to a Thailand sex tourist hotel would look like. Like, if you just sort of imagine him in
like
Madras shorts and like a really shitty kind of like Guayabera shirt or something, walking in and going like, where are the ladyboys at?
Well, that highbrow political analysis seems like the perfect place to leave the episode this week. Jeb, thank you so much. How can people find you online?
Well, they can find me at facebook.com/, isn't it politics? Is it just politics that's there?
Yeah, I think so.
They can contact
me. Oh, maybe it's Politics Podcast, actually.
Maybe, let me check. They could contact me there or my other podcast, / This Week in Atrocity, or on Twitter at Mobute, Mobute. And where may they find you?
Guys, I've just double-checked. It's Politics Podcast. Someone else has snapped up politics, unfortunately. Such a great joke. We thought we got to first.
Some other sophisticate.
Yeah, exactly. Or if you want to find me, facebook.com/TimBatComedian. Don't use that one, though. Unless you live in New Zealand, then you should keep your eye on that one to track my shows. But Twitter's the place for you. Twitter.com/Tim_Bat. Been a pleasure as always, Jeb. We'll be back again next week to dissect whatever craziness has happened in the last 7 days. Otherwise, may you all live in interesting times.
The Trump administration faces a deadline today to turn over evidence supporting the president's claim that his campaign phones were tapped. Key figures in both parties say they've seen no proof to back up President Trump's charge made more than a week ago now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.